Welcome to Building Better Businesses, an ABA podcast. Learn firsthand from business owners who built successful ABA businesses. Utilize proven techniques and strategies to help your practice thrive. This is Building Better Businesses in ABA podcast with Jonathan Mueller.
He is the founder and CEO of Reputation Elevation, a digital marketing firm that primarily serves the ABA field. Reese has spent 9+ years in digital marketing. And in the past 4 years, he's focused on helping ABA providers attract new clients using proprietary systems that support consistent 7-figure growth. Reese is also a fellow alum of the University of Virginia. So Reese, wahoo wah, as we like wah-hoo-wah. To say. And welcome to the pod, man. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's great to be here. And thank you for the warm introduction.
Yeah, you have the distinction of being the first fellow University of Virginia alum on the pod. So
amazing.
This is going to be a fun conversation and a really important one because we know how many, there's 7,000 ABA providers out there that are trying to get attention with for candidates, for clients, et cetera. And the work you're doing is really important to supporting them. So maybe I'd love to, like, if you could share your inspiration for serving the ABA field. And in particular, like, I think the first ABA provider you worked with, and how you responded to the question they asked of, like, or you asked them, what's special about you?
That's right. Well, when you talk about inspiration, I think, first of all, that just knowing that we are helping, and you are too, because you're on the billing side of things, helping organizations as well. But knowing that we're helping organizations to make a really positive difference in the life of the kiddos is really incredible. And I'll even tell you about one parent who recently got in touch with a BCB that I'm working with. And when she learned about ABA, because she had seen the advertising and then spoken with this BCB that I'm working with, she literally just started crying because she was so relieved to find something that would be potentially so transformational for her son. And her son is already 18. And she felt tremendous remorse that she hadn't really found out about ABA earlier. So, you know, that's very important to me. And also I just enjoy that this is a field where I'm able to really provide a lot of value based on sort of like unique combination of my skill set and then the industry as a whole. In terms of that first client you're mentioning, so when I got started with ABA, I'd never heard of it before, like most people really outside of the field. And so when I was talking with this client who was referred to me, had just started an ABA practice on the East Coast. So I asked her, what makes your company special and different from your competitors in the area? And she gave me the answer I never expected. She said, quite simply, nothing. I said, what do you mean, nothing? There's nothing you do that's different at all from any of your competitors? And she said, no, not really. And then she started telling me about this thing called out-of-network billing, which I didn't really understand back then, but she explained to me that there's this thing where, she only will accept out-of-network benefits. And so I said, so you're telling me that you don't provide anything better or different than anybody else, but you do charge more. Is that correct? And she said, yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of worried, you know, maybe this isn't going to work out because you have to have something good to promote. But it turned out that the worries were unfounded, and this client went on to quadruple in size pretty quickly with the advertising. And I realized that it's really about two things in essence. One is helping the right people to come across you at the right time, and then to make it easy and to make it frictionless to go ahead and get on the phone with you. And the other thing is that it really comes down to the quality of the therapists. Because what this therapist, what this client didn't realize is that granted her service description of ABA therapy was pretty much the same as everybody else and no different than anybody else, but her personality wasn't, right? And ABA therapy is only as good as the therapist providing it. And the reason she was able to be successful is because she really shined through with just a lot of positive traits that parents could pick up on it and feel. So perhaps she was a little too modest in saying she did nothing different because she herself is different. And that's a very key lesson, I think, for a lot of therapists, that it's in large part about letting your authentic self shine through, so the parents really pick up on the fact that you're there to take care of them.
That's right. I mean, there's something unique and special about any ABA practice. And at what I hear you describing, Reese, is you're helping simply to channel that in the right way and share that and amplify it to the world. Yes. What's really cool, I mean, clearly you're a marketing expert, right? Mm-hmm. But you're in this because you're passionate about this field. I mean, same thing with Element, mm-hmm. right? Like my organization, yes, we're revenue cycle and billing insurance experts. That's not why we do what we do. We do it because our vision is a childhood for every child. Like that's right. what gets us excited. And that's what me like symbolizes like values aligned partners to ABA organizations, helping to move the field forward and helping parents get access to services as quickly as they can.
Well, exactly. I think you're uniquely well positioned to do so because you come from Ascend as a partner in Ascend Behavior. And I just know, and people in the industry know that it's a very high quality organization that really delivers for the parents, for the therapists, and most importantly for the kids. And so I think it's really cool that you're providing sort of the back end support that made Ascend successful for everybody else to be able to benefit from.
Yeah. Well, in full disclosure, audience, we, Reese and NSN got a chance to work together a few years ago, which is really neat. And that is true. One question, Reese, you're in one case study, I was reading that one of your clients at ABA therapy clinic, I think they generated like $936,000 in revenue using just like $8,000 in Facebook advertising. Dude, how do you achieve those results?
Yeah, thank you. So there's a lot that goes into that. I think that the one thing that if I had to answer standing on one foot, I would say it's knowing where to prioritize your budget. If you open up Facebook ads and start looking at different campaign options, you're going to see like 12 different options. There's one of those options that's actually the right one to use, and the other ones are all a waste of your money, right? So that's a big part of it. Mm. Today, when clients come to me in ABA, I have this whole system A to Z worked out in terms of exactly what they do each step along the way, but not only the Facebook ads, but the marketing automation, and then the training on how to connect the calls. Back then, I didn't really have that developed yet, but I think it was just the focus on like the core essentials of knowing where to put the budget and then creating an ad experience that gives parents every reason to go ahead and get in touch without sort of like the red flags that maybe would scare them away.
Right on. It's something that every ABA provider struggles with right now is recruiting enough staff. And it's interesting because that's evolved from what I've seen like a couple few years ago. It was so hard to recruit BCBAs. Uh-huh. And now as a field, I think it's become really challenging recruiting RBTs. But I know you once told me recently, Facebook has made it virtually impossible to use ads for recruiting purposes. Why is that?
So that's true. Facebook has a very big priority on not allowing people to be discriminated against in any sort of fashion with job ads. And they went very, very far in removing the targeting that would be useful for reaching out to BCBAs. They sort of just, they took out probably hundreds of thousands of different interests from targeting, not because there's necessarily something wrong with each thing that they removed, but because I think that at some level they say, well, you know, it's too hard to figure out what's discriminatory, what's not. So let's just, you know, cut out wide swaths of what there is. I mean, they chose to use a whitelist instead of a blacklist. Whitelist meaning they only let you use targeting that they've pre-approved. Whereas a blacklist would mean they remove just the things they know they don't want. There's a whole large swath of targeting. So for example, if you were to try and advertise a product or service to BCBAs, you actually could choose to target people who studied ABA therapy as retargeting, which is really useful. Mm. But if you want to go ahead and do a job ad to recruit BCBAs, they will not let that option appear in, you know, available. And they won't let you target people by the college, the level of college degree they have, which I think is a little too far. LinkedIn would see that this is all too far. You know, on LinkedIn, you can target by job title and by age and by you have, I think, more control over location, and then also college degree and many other factors as well. So I think that for, I think they also may be so sensitive to the issue because of the scrutiny they face for all the reasons that they're controversial. So I think that's what goes into it. But essentially, it's almost impossible to use successfully for recruitment. Certainly not for BCBAs. I suppose if you, you know, if you're willing to consider a large number of mostly unqualified applicants for a paraprofessional position, then you could give it a try. But I very much recommend sticking to other options instead.
Interesting. So if I hear you right, there's a couple things going on here. One is this idea of Facebook's, because of the scrutiny that we know they're under, and Facebook or Meta or whatever they're called now, but this idea that they move from a blacklist of opt out for a Facebook user to a whitelist where a user has to opt in to sharing certain demographic information that's helpful to a target. That was one thing. Is that right?
So I would phrase it a little differently. That's more that within Facebook, they have, I don't know what the number is, let's just call it, you know, 200,000 options for different ways you could target people. And what they could have done is said, you know, we're not going to let people target by language or by ethnicity or by this or that. That would be a blacklist, right? And they do have that going on in all their ads and like any type of ad product you use with them. But they went a step further and they said, for job ads specifically, if you want to advertise a job position, not only are we not letting you have access to things that we've removed from the table as a blacklist, but you can only use targeting options that are waitlisted. And so that means some team sat down around a table and figured out, okay, well, which things do we want to include that we think make sense to include? And most of them are like irrelevant. So they really killed their platform in terms of recruitment, unless it's a job that is suitable for a very, very wide swath of the population, which is what you'll end up getting.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, so here's what's crazy about that to me, Reese, is, I mean, a provider could still advertise on Facebook, an ABA provider. They're going to take our money, right? But there's not going to be the results from it. Is that, am I reading into that?
So on the client side, it's much better. I mean, if you're advertising for clients, you can use Facebook ads really effectively. You can do that even though they removed all targeting that is related to autism directly. It used to be as recently as 4 months ago, I could target an audience of parents who have expressed an interest in autism-related topics on Facebook. That's gone now. So we've adapted and we used other options and it still works great. But they sometimes remove things from the table, even though they rely on their advertisers for revenue. That is true.
Yeah. So, yes, to be clear, the advertising for clients on Facebook can be successful. What I'm hearing from you is the advertising
but for recruitment, I would definitely
staff, say for team members, recruitment. Yes. Even though Facebook would gladly take like my money as an ABA provider to try to recruit. If I didn't know what I was doing, like I'm going to, gladly give my money, but I'm not getting the results I want.
Yeah. Well, you can see that the boost your post feature is sort of runs along the same lines that they're going to profit, but you're probably not going to benefit from it. So it's sort of like the gateway drug to Facebook ads, that if you start a Facebook page and you post something, they'll suggest you boost the post for a few dollars per day. And I think the main strategy there is just to get you to see all the cool targeting tricks they have, to get you interested in more Facebook ads. But I think people get stuck there because they try that for a month or two or three, nothing happens, and they're thinking, well, I guess it doesn't work. Facebook does work, but you just have to know which tools they use and use it the right way.
Yeah, gotcha. I like that. The boost feature is the gateway drug all your money with Facebook. I like
that. Google has it too.
So clearly there's a problem. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Google has, just to warn everybody, Google has something called, it's like Google Ads Express. It works great for dentists. It does not work for ABA practices. So if you are going to use Google Ads, do not take the Express option.
Oh, okay, so I have to double click on that. So Google Ads Express, why does it work well for dentists, but not for the
ABA? I think there are so many dentist campaigns that Google just has more data to work with. they don't. Google, basically, Google Ads Express is a way of harnessing AI and big data to try and just make campaigns that work for you without putting any effort into it. And they have a lot more to pull from in the dentist space, because Google Ads is something that it has just been used a lot more for dentists than it has been for APA.
Gotcha. They just have a lot more information.
They have a lot more data. That's my theory, at least, as to what's going on there. They have a lot more data into it.
That's fascinating. Gosh, you know, my mind goes in a lot of different directions there, including like, how would we know the point at which ABA has reached a tipping point that Google Ads now like are going to be effective? And that's probably like more of a philosophical question than a clear milestone we can delineate.
Yeah. So until you have a clear indication, it's best to use the more professional version of Google Ads, which gives you fine-tuned control over everything, as opposed to just like trusting the system to do it for you.
The use Google Ad words, it sounds like, as opposed to Google Ad Express. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, so thinking about like this problem on Facebook with recruiting ads, but like, I want to extend that a little farther. Like most ABA providers post on Indeed, right? And like our attention span as a society these days, I think is maybe 7 seconds, right? So like an ABA provider literally has 7 seconds to arrest the scroll in a prospective candidate's feed when they're looking through. And it's like, so what, I don't know, what I observe, tell me if I'm right or wrong here, is like most ABA providers' job postings on Indeed are either like just so dry and clinical and boring, so dry and boring, or like, they're promising like the moon, right? And unicorns and double rainbows and trips to Tahiti and all this other stuff. It's like clickbait and fake. Yeah. So I want to break down with you, Reese, like what does it take to make for a compelling ad?
Yeah.
And maybe we start with a non-exemplar. Like, what do you avoid if you want to make a great ad on Indeed?
Yeah. Okay. So I think you alluded to a lot of what to avoid. The most common mistake I see is leading off with a question that is very transparent and it's objective to get you to think the post is relevant to you. So an example of that is that the first line of the description starts off with, do you want to work for an organization that makes lives the differences of kids? And as you read that, you're thinking, well, yes, but also I don't like how you're trying to like loop me in with a question that every BCV will answer yes to. So sometimes that works in directional copywriting to ask a question that elicits the yes response from the reader. But I think this is not the right place to try that approach. So that's definitely one thing. Another thing would be just to be too sparse with your writing. I mean, I do see sometimes job posts where there's very little thought put into it. And it's just the most bare bones possible list of responsibilities and benefits, and that's it. Another would be hyperbole, which you also alluded to, with trips to heat and that sort of thing. Too many exclamation points, I think. There's a sense you can get when reading job posts that someone's trying a little too hard. And at least that would push me away if I were BCBA, right? And then I would say another thing would be to use generic language that could just as well describe any of your competitors as it does yourself, right? So you want to hone in on something that you can see that maybe not everybody else could say. And then lastly, sometimes posts will overemphasize really obvious things. I saw one job post on Indeed where the opening paragraph was just a definition of what a BCBA is. But anybody who's seriously considering such a job knows what a BCBA is. They don't need that information. So if you see that, you're reading like through this paragraph and it's like, why do I have to read through this paragraph? So I think to turn to like, well, what does work? I think the first thing is to start with the right expectations. Because I think a lot of where people are going wrong is that they are setting a goal that they're going to write a job post that's so amazing that, the candidates are just going to click on mine and submit an application to my post, but not somebody else's. But I think most people in recruitment have figured out that it's very common for a VC to entertain as many as 25 offers before settling on one. So we can't really expect to write something in a way that a serious job seeker will exclusively want to look at us. What we can do is sort of redefine success to be realistic, which would be that you make your company appear attractive, professional, and you express good values, and you write in a concise but effective way that respects the reader. So I think a good way to do it is to start it off with a very short first paragraph just describing who you are as a company. Not being over the top, just but also obviously writing something nice about your company. Write a brief description of who you're looking for. You'll describe more later, but to start with a brief description, you're just getting people into the job post. And then in the third paragraph, I'd recommend that you make it a little longer. And this time, go into a little bit more to like what makes your organization unique and try to write from a place of truth. Because if we do that, then the words that come out in the word processor are more likely to sound authentic than if you're, just trying to take something. So that's the approach I would take. I think it's like you have to set the right expectations and be professional and positive and not give people a reason to say no to applying, right? If you can make yourself attractive and professional, but not over the top, and there's nothing there that is going to make VCs want to go to the next one without first applying to yours, and I think that's a victory.
Because the goal here is like get them interested enough that they hit the apply, right? Because the reality is most job seekers, Indeed makes it super easy, like check, apply, check, apply, check. Apply, and apply. Next thing you know, a candidate's applied to like 100 different ones, right? I like that. This is such powerful feedback. Some things like to reflect on here. I always think like empathy. All right, let's put ourselves in the shoes of a candidate. And I wonder how many ABA providers now, to be candid, like I never did this. Like, so I've screwed up on it, but like, have I gone on Indeed and registered as a job seeker and then gone through the process of here is what I am seeing.
Yeah.
And,
for sure.
And looking. And so at like understanding all of the different options that an RBT or a BCBA or whomever are going to have when they're clicking and what are the job postings that I'm drawn to, and then being discriminating, like, is that clickbait or was that like a realistic description of an organization and what's special and unique about them? I wonder if like that empathy and like putting yourselves in candidate shoes could be helpful.
Absolutely. And I think this is an example of an area where many providers maybe are missing a certain perspective, because ABA is ultimately a practice, a field of practice where there are a lot of rules, a lot of processes, a lot of paperwork, a lot of T's to cross and I's to dot. And if you don't, then we all know the payers aren't going to be happy with you and it's going to hurt your revenue cycle for a while, right? And so there can I think anybody working in that environment where the sort of attention to detail, like the picky sort of thing is so pervasive, runs a risk of perhaps losing touch with that more human side of things that you're referring to.
Totally. We can't lose. We're human services organizations. Right. If we lose touch of that, it's up front and try, like, as we hire to track it, it's like we're cooked. You know, the other challenge I realize is I hear you describe this. There's this principle in economics called the principal agent problem. And that is if you have the principal, the person who wants something done, like a mission to be carried out. Right? Say to save the world. And then you hire someone, the quote unquote agent, are you going to have the same incentives as the principal and the agent? in that job to be done, mm-hmm. saving the world, or yes. are there differences in expectation? And this mm-hmm. isn't just economics. This applies to anything in life, yes. this principal agent problem. Especially as organizations grow, they get recruiting, or talent acquisition teams, but then you have the, clinical teams are going to be supervising them. I mean, there's nothing more defeating than a recruiting team. I mean, trying their best by like putting out this amazing flowery ad that may not right. represent reality. And then next thing you know, that person's in week one training or there's no training at all or whatever. They're like, hang on, right. I was sold a bill of goods. And it's that principal agent difference yes. in expectations that can destroy trust immediately.
Yeah, that's a very insightful way of putting it. Oh. 100%. Well,
ABA practice owners, are billing and insurance issues getting you down? Well, let me tell you, Element RCM is your answer. Element provides world-class revenue cycle management services, contracting, credentialing, authorizations, billing, and more. Element's your partner, so you can focus on what you love to do, providing the highest quality services to your families and clients. Element's a preferred partner of the Behavioral Health Center of Excellence, and its founders have nearly 20 years of experience owning and operating successful ABA organizations. They understand you. They know that every dollar counts, that integrity is everything. Element works with any practice management system, and Element's not a vendor, they're your partner. So find out more and take a free revenue cycle assessment at elementrcm.ai. I love how you described this, this description. Let me ask you, because one of the things I've done before in job ads, and this idea of make sure your values come through. I've always loved to put hashtag, and I'll sprinkle our values throughout and try to work them in to components of the responsibilities or as it gets introduced. But I don't know, is that the right way to incorporate your values through it as opposed to just listing, here are our values, fun, integrity, excellence?
I think that is a good approach. Yeah, I think that's a good approach because anybody can write a list of values. And so, and most companies do. So then when you read that list of values, you might be thinking, this sounds really nice, but also sounds like something that a group of executives just, got together for around a table for an hour and wrote up, and who says that it's real? Whereas if you can express it with words that demonstrate the values, I think that is possibly more effective. It's sort of showing instead of telling.
Ooh. Using words that demonstrate the values as opposed to just trying to hit them on with a hammer. This is our values. I like it.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. And there's a whole separate conversation here about the importance of coming up with values that resonate across your organization that aren't just a bunch of corporate suits, right? Sitting in a boardroom. But that's another conversation. Yeah. Well, then I want to look at maybe other platforms that to you are exemplars. But where you've seen ABA providers be successful recruiting candidates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the most overlooked platform is LinkedIn, but they have really great ad tools for getting yourself in front of BCBs or RBTs. They have very precise targeting options. You'll always run into the same sort of limitations in LinkedIn that you do anywhere else, which is just the economics, the fields, they're being a greater demand for providers than their providers, right? I have heard of people using ZipRecruiter. I think Indeed's pricing model is more attractive personally. I think ZipRecruiter really has a higher sort of minimum to get in the door. So I would definitely support the conventional wisdom in starting with Indeed. And maybe, of course, using the BCD email list. It's a classic one as well. And from there, you have ZipRecruiter and LinkedIn. In theory, it could be that Google Ads would work as well. I just haven't tried it for recruitment purposes. I do it for client acquisition. I haven't done it yet for recruitment, but it is something interesting to try because you could try advertising a job post. The question would be whether or not there is enough traffic locally for the terms that you're interested in, like BCB positions, for example, for Google to allow you to run an ad. Because if you choose a keyword that is so rarely searched for, that maybe less than 10 people in a month will search for it, in a certain region, then Google may consider that keyword ineligible to run. So there is some experimentation maybe to be done there, which is interesting, but I can't give an official verdict on it yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing that I'm hearing as you describe this, Reese, is the importance of a provider. Just identify for people whom you hire, where did they come from? And and look at that over time to understand where you're being successful and where you're not being successful. And look, there are, I mean, all kinds of successive levels of like analysis you can do, right? Like, and then you can extend it to turnover, right? If someone's turning over, where do we hire from? Does that have some kind of effect? But that, I mean, it just starts with, it sounds like understand where you're being most successful.
In yes.
Quality
from. For sure.
The BACB email list, that's an interesting one. I'm not sure that like I've ever interacted with and used it, but it seems like there's so much there. Like there's so many different providers advertising. Yeah. Can that be successful, or what are your thoughts?
So I haven't myself sent a campaign for recruitment purposes through that list. So I can't report from personal experience. I can to say that I do hear other people recommending it. So it does seem to be something people talk about. That gives me at least some indication that it may be worthwhile to try. It's not so expensive anyway. So, it probably is sensible to at least give it a try. And you can choose the region that you're advertising in. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So anecdotally, it sounds like there's you've heard of success out there.
Yes.
Well, I want to switch back to I want to switch back to client, like marketing for clients, and this, you know, this thorny question of how do you like ethically provide parent testimonials? We know there are BCBA got prohibitions around that in the ethics code. We also know the Behavioral Health Center of Excellence came up with some updated guidelines in their most recent accreditation standards that sort of put some parameters around it. And I know on the one hand, it's interesting. I understand that this is something we have to be super careful about, right? Because we don't want to somehow influence the therapeutic relationship by asking for a testimonial. On the other hand, I mean, I see there are a lot of nonprofits out there, ABA providers, and that's like that's core to fundraising. So how does a nonprofit deal with that? And I also see like American Psychologist Association, right? Or other sort of mental health, behavioral health bodies don't maybe have the same prohibitions.
Right.
Help me wade through this, Reese.
Yes. So the first thing to say, which you alluded to, is that of course, BCBAs need to follow the code because they are responsible for following the code. They have agree to follow the code and follow the code. And I believe there needs to be more of a dialogue about this topic because there are unintended consequences to the BACB's very well-meaning policy that they want. The BACB has stated that it wants to ensure that parents don't feel coerced into doing something they don't want to do, and they don't want undue influence in the relationship. That is a value, and it's an important value. But we have to look at the other values that and see if there maybe are some other values that are coming to conflict with that. So I'll give you an example of a big issue facing ABA that there is no coherent response for right now in the industry. And that is that you have some people who are super vocal in opposition to ABA, and they'll write things like, you know, hashtag ABA is abuse on social media and so forth. Mm-hmm. And there's not really a coherent voice to counter that, right? And there are a lot of parents who will read this sort of thing and they will be really afraid to even consider ABA therapy for their kids, even though what's being referenced here maybe is methodologies that were used a long time ago, but that aren't today. And even if parents may talk to BCBAs today and learn about the sort of fun and play-based approach that most people are taking, would not think for a second that it's abuse. One thing that would be helpful for combating the misperception of the field that really is a problem would be to encourage parents to speak up about their experiences. So that's an important value that I think is being left behind. And the problem here is that ABA is medically necessary. That's why it's mandated by insurance. And here's this medically necessary mm-hmm. treatment where one of the most effective forms of advertising is not really allowed. You don't find this with chiropractors. You don't find this, I said, with the American Psychological Association, I forget the exact name, but there are plenty of other fields of medicine where you could make the same sort of, you could see there's the same sort of concern. Well, we don't want to coerce people or use our influence mm-hmm. the wrong way or so forth. But those professions don't go with that approach. I think there's also an issue here of disadvantaging clinician-run practices. And here's why. If you are a business owner who is not a BCBA, but you start an ABA practice, you don't have to follow the code. BCB can't do anything to you because you're not a BCBA.
Great.
You can go ahead and request all the reviews you want all day long. And then when people go to Google and they search for an ABA practice, who are they going to go to? The guy with 87 five-star reviews or the clinician with one? And then there's another problem. Yeah. There's another problem, which is, hey, look, if you're in business long enough, there's probably going to be that one parent who's really upset about something and it leaves that one-star review. And if you don't have any tool for countering that, then people go to Google, they see a one-star review, and they think you're a terrible organization. You could be the best organization there is. So you have a responsibility to all of your providers that depend on you for a salary. You have a responsibility to represent ABA in the best possible light as a professional, and you can't. But the private equity people sure can because they're not bound by the code. So there are unintended consequences here. I think a lot of the drive is that there's sort of this image that the way people ought to decide whether or not to use ABA therapy, enroll their child in it, is by doing research and becoming educated and informed. Mm-hmm. But people don't shop for things that way, right? People are reacting to essentially emotions, branding, and reviews, and whoever reaches out to them first. That's what they're looking at. So it's unfair to those practices that are clinician run. And I think there has to be a dialogue with BCB. The people at BCB are fantastic professionals. When you read the code, you can see that their priority on ethics really shines through. They really are well thought out, but there needs to be more feedback and more dialogue about this because it's just not realistic in today's environment to enshrine this one value of keeping the relationship pure in every possible way, right? At the expense of everything else. And especially because if you think about it, no relationship is ever 100% pure. You can say, I'm not going to accept any gifts because the code doesn't let me. And, but there are plenty of other ways that people influence each other or, things are left unsaid but are clearly communicated. There are all kinds of things that occur in a long-term relationship with a client that means relationship by definition is not pure. And that's because we're all people, right? So if people are going to have effective relationships, it's going to be a relationship. There's a relationship. There's going to be sort of skin in the game between the parties.
Right.
So I don't know if it's realistic to even expect in any event that the policies in place can really create an environment where these things are pure and unfettered by ulterior interests.
Yeah, this is so important because I agree with you 100%. The BACB is a phenomenal organization, a phenomenally run organization, and they have, faster, I think, than any other certification body in other fields. They've scaled up extraordinarily, and their outcomes, what they're trying to achieve, is noble. But I hear you that there are disadvantages, particularly when it comes to clinician-owned versus non-clinician-owned practices. But let me, I want to come back to that in a second. But let me just clarify, because I've read lots of articles on what I'm about to ask, but I want to make sure I understand the truth. But consumers, clients are making decisions based on reviews they see. Is that right? Is that part of their consideration set?
100%. 100%. And that's why many corporations or many companies go to great lengths to create fake reviews. Amazon is a place where this happens all the time. It's almost impossible to sell something on Amazon without good reviews. So what do? There are entire communities online where you find someone on Amazon, you say, okay, I'll buy my product, I'll send it to you, leave me a good review, and I'll give you the money back via PayPal. And this is routine.
Yeah. Yep.
This is standard practice in the industry. Because if you don't do it, you can't succeed.
Oh, absolutely. Because consumers are looking for heuristics. They're always looking for heuristics to help them, like, shortcut decisions and just make something easier, right? So we have all of these, like Daniel Kahneman. Was it Danny Kahneman?
Kahneman, yeah.
Thinking Fast and Slow. Oh my gosh, he was a psychologist, but won the Nobel Prize in economics. There's a different name for it, because economics wasn't considered a true science. That's a whole separate topic. But he wrote this book, Thinking Fast and Slow. Exactly. Won the Nobel Prize talking about these things, right? These heuristics we use as human beings, right? Type one versus type two thinking. And sometimes and knowing when to use that fast twitch thinking, like we got to make a decision, right? Because that's a fight or flight and let's step out of the road from the car approaching versus when should we make a more thoughtful decision and take our time. And as humans, we're not good going from one to the next. So we're constantly looking for these heuristics to shortcut them. But sometimes that means we're just quickly looking, for better or for worse, we're quickly looking at, oh, how many reviews did this practice get versus that one? I'm going to go with this one because I hear you. This is a really complex question that requires more dialogue.
Yes. 100%.
You know, the other thing that's important, I like, you know, the one thing that, and the reason full disclosure Ascend, has been, BHCOE accredited for 4.5, almost 5 years now. We've gone through six different accreditation rounds.
Wow.
Is for this reason that you pointed out is that, you know, I am not a BCBA. And yes, one of my co-founders, Dr. Mike, is. But, you know, the other two, me and Will and I, we're not BCBAs. But we wanted to be held to that higher standard and put our money where our mouth is that, yes, quality and commitment to ethics is important. And so we signed up for BHCOE accreditation to demonstrate that. And then there are certain, you know, stipulations around how marketing does or doesn't happen. But you're right, that doesn't, there is an inherent disadvantage for for clinician-owned organizations who might be under this prohibition of not advertising.
Yes, absolutely.
Reese, what's one thing that every ABA practice, every ABA business owner should start doing, one thing they should stop doing?
Who start doing? Wow. It's hard for me to speak to for every practice. I think that one thing that's important for practices is to make sure that they are aware of how much risk they're taking with whatever their practices are or expectations are for sort of like how and when parents find you. Because a lot of practices have come to me in a situation where they had great referrals, you know, they always had another referral around the bend and no shortage of parents until that one day they didn't anymore for whatever reason that they usually can't pinpoint, unless it's just that a payer decided to stop referring that, you know, the network members to them. And they can end up in really hard positions. So that would be one thing. And then one thing they should stop doing, I have to think about that one a little bit more.
Fair enough. I mean, I think one of the things that I'm learning from this is, you know, before you go out and just blindly start advertising, certainly if you were ever considered testimonials, talk to someone, right? Yeah. Read up on BHCOE standards, get really clear on BACVs, ethical guidelines, and what that means. And, you know, talk to other experts who have done that and who can help navigate. But there's so much complexity just in digital marketing, like having an expert, at least have a conversation with an expert, because there's a heck of a lot more. Sure, ABA practice owners are cursed with competence, right? And that's why they've started organizations and done amazing things.
Yes.
And there are experts out there potentially who can help.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Reese, where can people find you online?
ReputationElevation.net. Every place to go. And if people are interested in getting in touch, there's an option there to book a time for a free consultation for those who are interested.
Awesome. Free consultations. You know what? I, by the way, I love like signing up for those anytime I'm trying to learn more about something, because I mean, I know people like you, and many other service providers to our field are always open to having conversation, providing feedback, guidance. And if nothing else, you learn something from it, even if you don't end up signing up for services. So I think that's powerful.
Yeah. So, it's actually something I talk about with my clients, that when you're talking to parents, you should make it really clear up front that you're only going to offer to enroll them into therapy if you really believe that your services are the best option for them. And if you don't, then go ahead and recommend some other option that's better for them. Because first of all, along the way, you're going to feel great about just the fact that you're doing something maybe altruistic. But also parents will get the sense that you are there to make sure that they get some value out of the interaction, whether they're enrolling or not. So look, sometimes there are situations where I'll say to a prospective client, I don't think that this makes sense for you right now, but you know, maybe check out XYZ. And then when you get to a different stage, you know, then let's talk again, because there's no point in providing a service to someone that won't be a value to them.
Yeah, that, you know what, that is, all right, that moved me, because not only as ABA Praxis are having conversations with parents, like not only in what you're suggesting, are they saying, hey, look, there's 1 in 44 kiddos who have autism. There's so many kiddos that need services. Let's not carve these barriers around ourselves. Let's actually collaborate and help one another.
Yeah,
for this greater goal of getting all service. I love that. And then the second thing I heard you describe was like, that actually builds trust when you can say, look, my job, parent, is to help you make the best decision. And part of that is evaluating other providers as well, because this is a really, really important decision. And that's building trust in addition to being the right thing to do. I love that.
Yeah. Like, you never lose out doing this. You know, if you're serving other people, eventually it's going to come back around to you. So people don't have to be afraid they're going to lose out by helping somebody else. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Love it. All right. Well, you ready for the hot take?
Okay. Let's go for it.
All right. So first question, you're on your deathbed. What's the one thing you want to be remembered for?
Yeah. So it's hard to pick one thing. I'm very, very passionate about Torah study. And I hope that'll be something I'm remembered for. I'm passionate about being there for my family, my kids, my wife, and trying to work on myself, to refine myself, to express positive character traits that I hope make things more pleasant for people who interact with even less.
Awesome. What's your most important self-care practice?
So there's a meditation, there are a couple of meditation practices that have been passed along in Jewish tradition that I've been gifted to become acquainted with, that I try to make use of.
Awesome. I try to meditate 10 to 20 minutes every morning. And I can tell when I don't do it, my day is not right.
Changes things, doesn't it?
There's a way it has. It really does. Yeah. What's your favorite song?
Favorite song. It's changing all the time, but there's an artist I really like called Zusha, and it's like an alternative, but very sort of spiritual Jewish duo in New York that really touches me.
Right on. If you could give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
So, boy, my 18-year-old self needed a lot of advice, but I think that it would be to get in touch with just the unconditional value of your existence, whatever you achieve or don't achieve, or whatever you have or don't have, because I think that is something that we all can easily lose sight of in a world where there's a lot, there are expectations, there are standards, there are judgments. And expectations, standards, and judgments are part of life. So I'm not saying everyone should be like floaty and off the clouds, but to have that good balance between the two is important.
Oh, get in touch with the unconditional value of your existence. That is so profound, Reese. I love it.
Thank you.
Well, last question. If you could only wear one style of footwear for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I like Echoes. Echo is like a, you know, it's like a solid quality, good shoe. And yeah, so I don't know, I probably have to go to an Echo store and pick something there.
I like it, and versatile too. Right on. Hey, Reese, thank you so much for being on the pod. I appreciate you sharing.
Of course, Jonathan, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, Reese. Good luck, and thanks for the work you're doing for our field.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
What up, listeners? Hey, I got something for you. If you like my Building Better Businesses in ABA podcast, you're going to love the Behavioral Observations podcast with Matt Sikoria. So I recently met Matt at ABAI, and let me tell you, I was just an instant fanboy. Matt's the real deal. His pod is all about stimulating talk for today's behavior analysts. So session 191 on his pod is on the behavior analysis of lying. That's right, lying. How awesome is that? Who does that? He also talks social skills, ACT, FAs, and so much more. His guests include Greg Hanley, Jonathan Tarbox, and other legendary names in our field. And as a BCBA, you could even get CEU credits through Behavioral Observations. You can find Matt and the Behavioral Observations podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast channel. Enjoy, friends.
Thanks for listening to Building Better Businesses in ABA podcast. Stay tuned for our next exciting episode. In the meantime, please like, subscribe, share, and comment. We value your feedback. Don't forget to follow us on social media at elemidrcm.ai.